It isn't, okay.
That's recorded.
Good morning, dear hearts, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. This morning, we're going to continue our study in the book by William Q. Judge entitled Letters That Have Helped Me, and specifically, letter 11, which is entitled Coping with Suffering. But before we begin that, back in the early 20th century, 1909 to be more exact, Robert Crosby founded the United Lodge of Theosophists, and he put together a document, a guiding document, one mere piece of paper, 239 words to be exact, that express the aim, the purpose, the teachings, and the nature of the United Lodge of Theosophists, which to this day is our guiding policy throughout the world in all ULT centers or lodges. And it is simply called the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. It tells all those with ears to hear that we are an association of students with similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. And we fit ourselves through study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. What we will teach them when we are able is the philosophy of theosophy, and that universal brotherhood is indeed a fact in nature. Our tools for this endeavor will be the straight line theosophical teachings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. Upholding this declaration at this lodge, we have two meetings weekly. In July, and on Sundays, we meet 11 o'clock and go till 12 o'clock. The door is open at 10:30, and the meeting is promptly over at noontime. There's one more meeting in July, and in August there are no meetings on Sundays. There are, however, Wednesday meetings throughout the summer, and they are at 7:30 to 8:30. The doors, however, open at 5:15 for your use of our reference library at the front of the building to 7:15. Temporarily, the library is closed right now for repairs, but we hope that's just a temporary inconvenience. On Wednesdays, we're discussing and studying in the 5,000-year-old plus Eastern treatise on human psychology called the Bhagavad Gita. Are we in chapter 3 right now or going into 4? Going in?
Okay.
We're on Wednesday evening, this Wednesday evening, chapter 4 is our study topic. This lodge, like all other lodges, is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend solely as well on voluntary contributions of time, effort, and service. All are invited to participate in any way they can, and if you can, please see someone at the book table before and after all meetings. Okay, I think that summarizes all the utilitarian stuff. Let's get on with today's letters that have helped me. I'm sure you all have a copy of the handout for today, and we will have it summarized. Actually, we'll have the first six paragraphs summarized by a student, after which time we will have plenty for questions and comments.
This wonderful little book you will find for sale on the library table. And those of us who have a copy will often tell you even a random selection of these letters at a particular time seem to go right directly to the point that we are facing. So this idea of coping appears to be done on equal terms. We'll just summarize the first important part of this section. Dear brother, it has been with regret that I hear of your serious illness. Jasper, while life hangs in the balance, as it would seem yours does, and for some time will, you will feel much depression. Now, it is not usual to thus calmly talk to a person of his death, but you don't mind. I do not agree with you that death is well. And he mentions yours is not a case like that of a blank. Someone else who was to die and decided to accept life from great powers and work on for humanity in the midst of all the throes and anguishes of that body. Why should you not live now as long as you can in the present body, so that in it you may make all the advance possible, and by your life do as much good as you can to the cause and man? Such are my views. Life is better than death, but death again disappoints the self. Death is not the great informer or producer of knowledge. It is only the great curtain on the stage to be rung up next instant. Complete knowledge must be attained in the triune man, body, soul, and spirit. When that is obtained, then he passes on to other spheres, which to us are unknown and endless. By living as long as one can, one gives the self that longer chance. Continue. It is not for myself that I speak, brother, but for thee. Because in death I can lose no one. The living have a greater part in the dead than the dead have in the living. Any idea that one cannot succeed or had better die than live because an injured body seems to make success unattainable is doubt. We dare not hope, but we dare try to live on and on, that we may serve them as they serve the law. We dare not hope, but we dare try to live on and on, that we may serve them as they serve the law. We are not to try to be chaos or to do any one thing in this incarnation, but only to know and to be just as much as we can. And the possibility is not measured. reflect then that it is only a question of being overcome by what? By something outside. But if you accuse or doubt yourself, you then give the enemy a rest. It has nothing to do, for you do it all yourself for him, and leaving you to your fate, he seeks other victims. Rise then from this despondency, and seize the sword of knowledge. With it and with love, the universe is conquered. Not that I see thee too despondent, but I fain would give thee my ideas, and even did something kill thee against thy will the next day. Glad that although the body is painful, you yourself are all right. We have in various ways to suffer, and do not doubt, I do not doubt, it is a great advance if we can, in the midst of physical suffering, grasp and hold ourselves calm and away from it. Yet also the body must be rested. Rest. And let the anxieties to do lie still and dormant. By that they are not killed, and when the body gets stronger, more is known. Coping with suffering.
Okay, there you have it. All about suffering. Doesn't specifically talk about the various forms of suffering. Everybody thinks suffering is physical.
You lowered the mic and it's a little harder to hear you again.
Oh,
on page 4 of the printed handout, at the very bottom, we found that to be the most helpful thing. You are not tired, and I think we're all tired in this sort of hurly-burly civilization. It is that body. So I think that's very critically important. We are not tired. It is the body that is tired.
Yeah, that's the point they're making there, or Mr. Judge is making in this letter. You are not tired, you are not your body. That's what it's saying. Your body may be weak, but you are not weak.
On page 2, he says, rise then from this despondency and seize the sword of knowledge. With it and the club, the universe is conquerable. So I think the knowledge that was just stated in the previous comment, that we are not our bodies, I think that knowledge, knowing that, can, we think, can be a help in helping us work through this suffering that we have with illnesses and whatnot.
Yeah, it's claiming ownership. Obviously, the bodies that we have, we've made for ourselves. And whatever problems it has are ours. But we don't have to own them. What we have to do is recognize what they are and move on. Try to correct it if it's correctable. Move on. Get the strength you need. It's all about the thoughts that you have. Thoughts are things. Thoughts are powerful. Earlier in there, it tells you don't have doubt. Now, outside interest will eat you up. And it's kind of like saying, If you think you can, you can. You think you can't, you're right again, because you can't. You mentioned Buddha. Buddha said that in his four noble truths, all life is suffering. His second noble truth, that was the first, and the second one is suffering can be, suffering is caused by selfishness and craving and aversions. His third noble truth was that suffering can be cured, it can be fixed. And his fourth was, you follow his eightfold path and his five precepts, and you'll cure your suffering. Yes. Well, there's all kinds of suffering. I started to say that most people think that suffering is just their illness or their physical limitations, some kind of an injury. But there's also mental suffering. I think maybe the Delphi Oracle had it right. Man, know thyself.
I think usually the only way we give up something that's really harming us is when we get to the lowest point. So good advice isn't always followed. We just think it's a wonderful fact that Theosophy gives us that physical suffering represents the end of karma. That when it gets to the physical, it's working its way out. On page 2 again, up at the top, some interesting advice. Better a false hope with no doubt than much knowledge with doubts of your own chances. So the hopeful person does even better than the one who knows a lot and doubts.
Yeah, and you made a comment earlier that you said give an advice. Taking advice, And advice for one is not advice for all. So you have to be very specific. Going back to the physical ailments spoken of before, the symptoms are totally different that fit 14, 15 different things. So you have to be a lot more specific about overcoming. I brought up that there's physical suffering that most people think about, then there's also mental suffering and emotional suffering, and there's even spiritual suffering. Most people just ignore suffering. I'll leave that for somebody else. Yeah, I got a little pain here, a little pain there, but mostly they ignore it until it comes and hits them hard, and then they seek religious advice on how to get rid of it, and vicarious atonement and all that kind of stuff. And so they take it on the chin and move on. They don't realize that there are other ways to handle suffering and things to do specifically.
Yes, and on page, tying in with that, on page 3, that third paragraph down, where it brings up the point, is it us or is it the situation? We have some discussion on how sometimes we get tied in thinking it's the situation where it's really our way.
Well, you wouldn't be in that situation if it wasn't yours to begin with. I don't know where to go with that, how to speak to that. If you can succeed in looking at it all as just what you in fact desire, is that where you're at? Then it will act not only as a strengthener of your good thoughts, but will act reflectively on your body and make it stronger. That's all about thinking negatively and taking ownership of that illness or sickness, disease. And you can't do that. You have to say, it's my body that has that problem. I will try to fix my body and make it strong again and keep a good mental attitude.
But it's also an honesty if we look and say, it is what I desire, not in this life, but I, as a soul reincarnating, I created this condition, so I should honestly take ownership of it. We spent some time once with the Indian grandmother's drumming class, and it was truly wonderful. And after we all drummed, one of the elder women stood up and said, "Remember, disease is like a guest you invited in. And until you treat it with respect, it will never leave."
This ease.
And Shakespeare also said the same thing. We are actors on the stage. So, but we're the star of our show. This is our show. So we are the star. So everything that comes to us is ours. So that and it's how we perform in the show. It's going to, you know, accumulate more karma, or we try to
Yeah, you bring in a good point. Doing what's best for everybody, not necessarily just ourselves, and that's the total benefit. That's the definition of compassion.
And we wonder too, the lesson that we have to learn with suffering, or at least one of them, would be acceptance, because if we continue to fight whatever is causing the suffering, aren't we doomed to repeat it in a next life then? But we think if there's that idea of acceptance, and with acceptance doesn't mean that what is happening you like. It's just a matter of acknowledging it and theosophically acknowledging that whatever is happening is ours. But if we continue to fight it, then we're doomed to repeat it.
Yeah, I don't know if I phrased that correctly before then, but I did say you can't take ownership of it. You just have to acknowledge that it's the body that has the problem and do your best to bring that body back to as good a health as possible. You don't take ownership of it. You accept that the body has a problem, and you do what you can to repair it. Yes.
Well, I think the idea that we're talking about is called renunciation.
Yeah.
We have to renounce everything, pain and suffering and joy and sorrow. We experience it, but we are not attached to it. We renounce the fruits of that.
The Gita class will love that. That was taught many thousands of years ago, and it's true to this day, and it will be true 5,000 years from now and longer. Yes, in the back.
George Burns, just before he died, said he wakes up in the morning and goes, "Oh no," then he goes, "Wait, I'm here."
That says it all, doesn't it?
But I don't think I'm dissimilar from other folks here. But, you know, when there's some people that share their suffering with everyone around them, and they verbally are like depressed and somewhat negative, like everyone annoys them, and so forth and so on. And I know that one of the virtues is patience. That is one of them. But as a human being, we know that negative thoughts and everything creates more of the same thing. So we often wonder, you know, in terms of being polite or whatever, as we always have tried to enter something positive. Sometimes it doesn't work. How do we help someone who is suffering, that is mental suffering, and they keep on creating more and more for themselves? What do you do? Or do you just simply a little bit each day? You can't look for results. You just have to be positive. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a hard one, because some people just reject you out of hand. But is it your duty then to keep on keeping on? Is it your duty to impress upon these people positive thoughts, to try to encourage them to think a different way? Is it your duty?
Well, isn't that my duty or responsibility with everyone to give them a positive impulse when I meet them, when I'm walking down the street, being positive? So, yes, I'm not responsible for anyone beside, you know, past that, because everyone either will accept it or reject it and do what they will with it. We have no control over that, but we do give an impulse. You know, it says that the truth is electromagnetic, and if we know the truth, our smile has to reflect that. It has to, it
Yeah, if you read, if everything you read will tell you that it's all about vibrations, and you're giving out good vibrations, speaking of electromagnetic, and it will be attracted to them.
We think, though, that somebody is so deeply into suffering that they're talking about it all the time, they're not going to hear anything good from you. What you can do is interrupt them and ask questions like, is there anything I can do for you? Do you need anything? What do you think might make you feel better? How often do you see the doctor? Anything, get them talking about the other side of their condition, what they need and what they could do. I think all we can feel is love and hope for them and not encourage the graphic descriptions.
Oh, it's further on in here, in this letter, you'll find that they talk about love and compassion, which is aiding in the alleviation of suffering for others.
Some of the worst kinds of suffering you will hear from young aviation pilots learning to fly. Fear of flying is a tremendous rate, and there is much suffering. However, at some point, that suffering does not prevent that pilot from really learning how to fly and getting his wings. And they will tell you, yes, every time I go up, there's a moment of suffering. And yet that is, he's an accurate, very, very good pilot, but he still suffers.
Yeah, well, I would think if I had a fear of flying, I probably wouldn't be an aviation cadet. But I don't know that it's suffering. I think it's anxiety, which is a form of emotional suffering. Yeah, you're anxious. And if that's the suffering, that's good, because it makes you more astute, more aware, more conscious of what you're doing, so that you don't have the problems that you, in the back of your mind, fear. That's one of those emotional suffering issues, like desire, fear, hate. Yes.
So what you're more or less saying is that we have to mentally grasp with the suffering, with how we interpret it, because we interpret suffering and like it means something, like I was bad, or I didn't eat right, always looking for the cause, and we want to beat ourselves up and punish ourselves before someone else does. That it's sort of like an ingrained, I don't know where it came from, but we find ourselves oftentimes thinking that, and we're like frightened, we're upset, we're like not in control. So, you know, this, even though we understand what death is, I think there's an incident of fear by the physical body, by everything that, you know, of death itself. We don't know, but we think it's all a mental process that we're talking about. And I think it's Pantangeli's, in his afterwards, talks directly about this. And this is Raja Yoga.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people will, they beat themselves up, they always look for a bigger stick, or the other shoe is that it's their fault. You know, they even go as far as, you know, and they cause this suffering that I'm having, and they'll go as far as blaming it on God. But yeah, people look for bigger sticks all the time to do that, and the fear of death is one of the great fears of humanity. Yes.
It's something that we can think about when we see the word coping on equal terms with that sense of fear from suffering. During World War II, there were men preparing for battle. There was tremendous suffering, loss of lives, poverty, anything that you want to think of that shows a great shaking fear. But once the battle was engaged, then that fear disappeared. So suffering is comparable. We put that word suffering in quotes because it's different. They're different individuals. And this article here is trying to show the correspondent that death is death, but up until that point, we have to overcome the fear of death.
Yes, thank you for the comment.
The chair just mentioned about how some people will blame their suffering on God. But what we've experienced by listening to other people, most of the time they give God all the praise and they take all the blame. That's in general, that's the way people are. But in either case, it doesn't help one mature spiritually because they're thinking about God as this gigantic male figure, generally, that can wreak havoc, that can cause plagues and floods and earthquakes and fires and all that. But for what reason? For what ultimate purpose? It's, you know, it's just, okay, because we were being bad, so now we're being punished. But it's just the whole concept of God as an extra cosmic supreme being versus theosophically, it's BMS, it's a principle, it's deity, it doesn't exist. That's that, and the fact that more and more people believe in reincarnation and karma, but they're missing, we think that they're really missing the whole God, the whole concept of God is still so skewed. And, you know, people are looking for somebody to praise or blame outside of themselves. And that really has to stop if we're going to gain any kind of spiritual maturity.
It does. The religions of the world have stressed that there is no way for you to be a better person or to get to heaven unless you worship in our cathedral and our God or whoever stands in for God at their place. And it's all about fear. They instill in people fear that this won't happen unless you believe this, or unless you come through us to do something, you will continue to suffer.
We think that once an idea is used humorously, you know it's pretty much accepted by everyone. We saw a funny poster, don't make the same mistake twice. Don't reincarnate.
Don't read what?
Don't reincarnate. But we wanted to go back for a moment to causes. We think when you take ownership, I caused this condition. Whatever it is, emotional, mental, physical, I caused it for myself. But I also have to look for the direct cause in this life. It could be the food I'm eating. It could be the shampoo I'm using. There's so many possibilities. But even if we fix it, if the karma remains, we'll get it in another way. But we think we have to do indirect and direct cause.
Yeah, I think if you get down to the bottom line is what everybody wants to hear about. And it's like, what is the bottom line? It's like selfishness, desire, ignorance. I mean, they're the big three. You have to overcome them, recognize that you are ignorant.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. And you lack the wisdom that's needed.
No.
Yes.
Well, in reading some of the devotional books, I would say Big Medicine is the best. It states there, every failure is success. Repeat the failures and become full of success. With first reading that, I say, why? Then we begin to think. And thinking, well, if I'm driven, it's something that I have to learn. Once I have overcome my ignorance in that area, full of success follows. So the failures are a friend. The suffering is a friend.
Failure is like, you can turn failure around. You know, you can look, I read the story of the discovery of a product called WD-40. I think everybody knows what that is. Well, it got its name because they had 39 failures. And the 40th was the water dissipator, WD-40. So they had 39 successful failures. That's the way you look at it. It's turning a challenge into an opportunity to do more. In business, they always talk about changing challenges and making them opportunities. Yeah, that's what it's all about. What would have happened if they stopped at 39? What about six up? You don't hear about it. Yes.
Well, as we understand it, a Mahatma has gained complete control of his lower nature, and therefore it seems his entire lower nature would be perfectly in line with where it needs to be for him to fulfill his highest purpose. And so it would seem probably there's no personal suffering that he experiences. However, a Mahatma, a being of compassion, is said to walk the path of woe. It seems that he's actually suffering because of the suffering that the human race is going through. So how would, or how does a Mahatma cope with our suffering?
How does a Mahatma cope with our suffering?
With our suffering, because whatever it is that they do in coping with the suffering they experience through us, maybe we could pattern ourselves after.
Does anyone have an answer for that? It, good.
Well, I think we live by example. And we had two teachers on the scene in the 1800s, and we see from their lives how they dealt with suffering. And they just worked. They worked on for the cause. And I mean, for the highest ideal that we could imagine. But they are the example. Read the history of HPB, we know that she suffered greatly. And it's just one of the realities of this plane of existence. We're on this material plane. And this is where we have the most resistance, the most darkness, the most ignorance.
I think what you're saying is that no matter what, continue to do the duty that lies before you.
The wisdom and understanding of a Mahatma is all-encompassing. Even as a parent, we can experience something along that line. We see one of our small children suffering, whether it's from the loss of something or humiliation, whatever it is. And we are suffering for them, but at the same time, we know the possibility we see all the hope that is there, which tempers the suffering that we feel. The Mahatma never goes against the law. So the karma of humanity has got to be overwhelming to those with the eyes to see it. But at the same time, they know we are identical to them. Therefore, the possibilities always remain.
And that would be when I describe some other types of suffering, emotional suffering, physical suffering, mental suffering, spiritual suffering. That would fit into that category. Because you know that there's a light above you, you just can't reach it. And that's suffering. Yes.
Well, the comment about God earlier, and in reference to being very materialistic, and that mostly most of our encounters are with a Christian community, we go west of here, and that the only thing that we can say to them is that Christos, what it means, Christ, what it means, what it truly, what's an esoteric meaning, that it's the light inside of us, that we are Christ. And sometimes you can begin a conversation with that kind of idea, and that they begin to listen, and then we can even find references to in the Bible that support this idea of suffering and how we created ourselves. We are the light that we are creating this world in which we live.
The light, the way, yes. There are many references that you can find in the Bible about suffering and about reincarnation, about karma. There's all kinds of references in there that were not taken out. And I'm sure that was just oversight. if they knew it, they would have taken it out of there.
Well, the thing about it is, in these rooms, we hear statements made that we have to think about. Think about. And once they rise above all karma, well, universal law is law. Yet the phrase rise above all karma, is that a contradiction, or is it our own ignorance that prevents us from rising above all karma in our daily life?
In the face of the topic for today of suffering, because that question has no borders. So in order to corral it down to the topic of today, suffering and karma, I would say that HPB could probably answer that best. And the key to theosophy, I think it's in chapter 12. She talks a great deal about suffering, and she ties in duty, and she ties in karma. She groups them all together. And she says, finally, if you ask me how we understand theosophical duty practically, and in view of karma, I may answer you that our duty is to drink without a murmur to the last drop whatever contents the cup of life may have in store for us. To pluck the roses of life only for the fragrance they may shed on others, and to be ourselves content but with the thorns, if that fragrance cannot be enjoyed without depriving someone else of it. I think that answers your question.
I think that's called the great sacrifice. Gita talks about that great sacrifice. You sacrifice the personal for the universal.
Yes.
And
yes.
That is that, and suffering is that. And we could change our attitude and say,
I have something I'll read when I close that'll answer that and address that specifically. Yes.
We really like this phrase on page 4 at the bottom of the second paragraph. It says, "In dreams we see the truth and taste the joys of heaven. In waking life it is ours to gradually distill that dew into our normal consciousness." And we can't add anything to that. That's just a wonderful, wonderful imagery there, that it's, you know, it is for us to gradually distill that joy into our normal consciousness. So that's our work. We're distillers.
Thank you.
Thank you. I also enjoyed that when I read it.
Well, a simple reading of the Kuan Yin pledge suggests that Kuan Yin inherently knew that if she took nirvana, she could never really be in nirvana, knowing that there are others who aren't there yet who are suffering. So her answer was to renounce nirvana and help to accept it until all creatures, you know, work for the salvation for all creatures. So maybe the implication there is if we're suffering about something, of course, if we could make it go away, make it go away. But if you don't yet know how to, then probably a good step in the right direction to learn how to is you probably set up the conditions within yourself to learn how, if you look around and see other people who are suffering, and maybe you can help them in certain ways. Suffering, then what goes around comes around.
Yeah, one of the ways to relieve mental type suffering is to go out and help other people. It deflects your thoughts away from all those negative thoughts while you're positively helping others, and you're right, what goes around comes around.
Well, I've been around infants lately, and one of them is getting 2 front teeth. Now, that child is suffering. He is, a fever, irritable, so they're suffering. We all suffer. Life is the suffering. And how we cope with that determines our character. If we fall apart with suffering, we can't do it. We can't accomplish anything. We all suffer. We all suffer at some time, place, and all its different forms. So it either makes us stronger or it destroys us. So we're all very strong here. We keep on coming back for the truth, because the world out there is dark and foreboding. We have to keep the light alive.
But I think you're absolutely right. The world is a dark place. And you could probably tell that by our last 4 Sunday meetings. We've talked about despondency. We've talked about despair. We've talked about doubt. Talking about suffering. There's also happiness and joy in our lives, and we pay much too much attention to the negatives. Yes.
Well, it isn't that the world is a dark place, it's that we, human beings, make it dark because we're selfish, but also because we're ignorant. We think if we pray to someone else, it will fix us, instead of doing the fixing that we have the capacity to do. So the world isn't dark. It's dark and light, and we just keep increasing the darkness by our cruelty and our stubbornness, our anger, our hate.
When I say the world, I'm not talking about the rock upon which we live. I'm talking about the population. That's what I was talking about.
But they're not dark either. They have the potential for light. They're in a state of ignorance, which is darkness, but they are not dark. Their condition.
We talked about ignorance and we talked about narrowness of thought. inferiority complex. They're all mental type sufferings. Fear and hate is abundant in the world.
Smile, you're on camera, Ken.
Alan Funk. Yeah, it's all, smile goes a long way. It's nonverbal communications that accepted worldwide by everyone in the population.
So if we can't suffer for someone else, we all have to do our own suffering. How can we, how as a compassionate being, can we truly help someone else who is suffering? As a compassionate, what is our duty?
Good question. Do you read my notes? Epictetus said, be not diverted from your duty by any idle reflection the silly world may make upon you. For their censures are not in your power, and consequently should not be a part of your concern. Don't worry about other people, what they're thinking, about what you're doing. Do your duty to help alleviate as best you can the suffering of others through the use of compassion, which is your duty to do. One question?
Sometimes saying something kind or asking the right question will make the person who is suffering stop for a minute.
Exactly right. I mean, we said it when we said smile. Smile goes a long, long way. We got time for this. So we go on day by day and suffer from the illusion that our self is all there is. To remove the cause, we must tread that middle way which leads to the end of our lower self, and then to the end of suffering of the self. Compassion, the will to end all others' suffering, will die with the need of it when the many is again the one and not before. Meetings adjourned.